Our Original Identity by Daniel L. Jensen. How old would you be if you didn't know how old you are? A friend of mine had this thought-provoking question put to her by her son. If you were asked this question, how would you answer? Think about it for a moment. Down through the ages, with all too few exceptions, mankind has bowed its head in blind submission to the false laws of time and aging. Time has been accepted as inevitable, irresistible. Material sense, based on this claimed force, outpictures human life as having a beginning, as briefly flourishing, then disintegrating. This is life as mortal mind conceives of it, finite, measurable, going on through stages and inevitably ending. This sense of life is based on the so-called laws of mortal mind, often referred to as laws of nature or natural laws. Considered as laws of nature, they appear to have the power, authority, absoluteness, and finality of rules established and enforced by God, for almost everyone accepts that God made every so-called natural thing. But such a blind acceptance of the concept that anything bearing the description natural must be God-originated tends to have us accept it as unavoidable as so-called law. Stop and think. Aren't we inclined to do this? Isn't that the bland answer given so often to even some mortal mind activity of gross sensuality and materiality, no matter how savage or brutal it may be, as in the law of the jungle? Oh, that's the law of nature, we say. Even songs glorify this commonly held belief. Remember that piece, Doing What Comes Naturally? Based on this preliminary misconception of a divine origin, mankind is often inclined to accept as unavoidable the so-called natural laws of biological life, birth, maturing, aging, disease, disintegration, and death, because an error in the premise always leads to an error in the conclusion. These so-called natural laws are all based on the foundation of a biological birth, for it all starts here. As an ancient Latin proverb states, we start to die when we are born, and the end depends on the beginning. So let's look at birth, and what better place to start than with the Bible's three accounts of creation. The first chapter of Genesis states that man is made in the image and likeness of God, totally spiritual. This, of course, is the only true story of creation. The second account of creation, written simply as an allegory for the spiritually ignorant tribesmen, is in the second chapter of Genesis, though most scholars agree that it was written prior to the first chapter. Scarcely anyone accepts this account as factual. I doubt that anyone here really believes that they came from a rib or a pinch of dust. But what of that third account, the biological, so-called natural story of creation? And Adam knew Eve his wife, and she conceived and bare Cain and said, I have gotten a man from the Lord. This attributes material creation to God, you see, and the whole world, almost everyone in it, learns and accepts this as the true story of man's creation. Why, of course, it's natural, isn't it? Based on this false law, other so-called laws dealing with nature are pronounced and accepted, such as laws of inheritance, and Mendel's laws of material genetics, which were, interestingly enough, propounded by an Austrian monk in 1866, the very year of Mrs. Eddy's discovery of the divine laws of Christian Science. Isn't that significant, the genuine and the counterfeit? Though greatly enlarged, Mendel's laws are today taught the world over as being the genetically controlling laws in all living things. We know them as laws of ancestry or inheritance, and for the most part accept them without question, as being natural. For example, if a mother-to-be has red hair and her husband has red hair, what color do you confidently expect the baby's hair to be? Or if they are both tall, don't we expect their children to be tall? And so on, with dozens of bodily characteristics, including their lifespan. Why do you think life insurance companies ask you all those questions about your family and how long they lived? Because they believe that it has something to do with your lifespan. They may not call it Mendel's Law in operation, but that's what it technically is known as. Also, we speak of the inexorable effect of environment and conditioning on all living things, Darwin's Law, another so-called material law of nature. And you submit yourself to this false law whether you want to or not when you pick up the package of material birth. If we were to ask which story of creation is true, the first, man is spiritual, or the third, the biologically based material account, most Christian scientists would answer, well, of course, the first, for man is spiritual. We say it all the time, don't we? But are we really living it and really identifying ourselves with it? Our textbook, Science and Health, makes so clear the importance of this concept. The foundation of mortal discord is a false sense of man's origin. Mrs. Eddy does not say that this false sense of man's origin is a foundation or one of the foundations, but the foundation of mortal discord. Think of this. She says that mortal discord is founded upon this false sense. Yet, I would not want to ask how many are, for themselves or others, still celebrating, actually celebrating, a day honoring a material origin, something which our leader referred to as the foundation of mortal discord. And she was certainly specific in her directions about this. Here is what she says in Science and Health. Never record ages. Chronological data are no part of the vast forever. Timetables of birth and death are so many conspiracies against manhood and womanhood. In Miscellany, she speaks about God's creation of man and about birthdays in regard to it. Consider how logically conclusive her reasoning is. The first part is a lovely treatment within itself. She says, is God infinite? Yes. Did God make man? Yes. Did God make all that was made? He did. Is God spirit? He is. Did infinite spirit make that which is not spiritual? No. Who or what made matter? Matter, as substance or intelligence, never was made. Is mortal man a creator? Is he matter or spirit? Neither one. Why? Because spirit is God and infinite. Hence, there can be no other creator and no other creation. Man is but his image and likeness. Are you a Christian scientist? I am. Do you adopt as truth the above statements? I do. Then why this meaningless commemoration of birthdays, since there are none? Had I known what was being done in time to have prevented it, that which commemorated in deed or in word what is not true would never have entered into the history of our church buildings. Let us have no more of echoing dreams. Perhaps the most subtle activities of all in denying God as the creator of man are Mother's Day and Father's Day. Their beautiful verses, cards, sentiments are delightful. I always loved to shop for them and later enjoyed receiving them. But we can see how they specifically establish the recognition and acceptance of our material origin, and with it all the dreaded false laws of aging, genetics, and conditioning for ourselves and our loved ones. For doesn't what looks like and certainly is intended as the sweetest act of kindness and appreciation, serve to fasten on and subjugate our loved ones to these cruel, destructive laws of aging, weakness, deterioration, and death. It comes, of course, in the guise of love and gratitude in order to get past our guard. These wonderful right motives can still be joyously exercised by having special days, or as some articles term them, no days, times of individual recognition, gratitude, and love. Such sweet surprises held on another day do not reestablish a false material basis for man with a Genesis 4:1 origin. Isn't this an even higher sense of love? Ask any experienced practitioner how often he has calls from patients closely following a birthday celebration or Mother's Day or Father's Day. Why? Because of an unintended reinforcing of the suggestion of aging with all of its false natural laws of limitation and finiteness. For when the party is over and everyone has gone home, the honored guest is left alone to consider, "I am getting older." And all the dreaded contemplation of what that means begins to set in. Even with youth, it reestablishes the imposed limitations of lack of judgment, experience, coordination, and reason. In fact, I would like to ask you a question. Under these material laws and their restrictions, what is the perfect age? You should have heard the opinions when I asked my Sunday school class of college students this question. But they finally agreed that we are always too young or too old. There simply is no optimum age from a material viewpoint. We come to see that Mrs. Eddy's directions to us in the exercise and demonstration of this science of Christ all have purpose, a divine purpose. And so do her directives regarding birth. Consider the importance that Jesus attached to this. The Christian Science Journal of December 1946 cites a biblical historian who reported the Master as saying, "I am come to destroy the works of birth." Jesus never was much of a compromiser with material birth. Should we be when we see what we have to expect from it? In sharp contrast to the world's accepted third story of material birth and its inevitable laws of aging and decay, let's look at man's existence under the first chapter of Genesis, the first and true story of man's origin. Mrs. Eddy puts it so clearly in a statement you know well. God expresses in man the infinite idea forever developing itself, broadening and rising higher and higher from a boundless basis. That's from Science and Health. What a different view of man, this spiritual one, birthless and therefore ageless. But what is age? Where is age located? In body? Of course not. Even the doctors have come to see this in their study of anatomy. Age is only a collection of false educated beliefs, simply images of mortal thought reflected on the retina of human consciousness. These false mental images are what the world interprets as age. Age is never a condition we have to deal with. There is never a matter body which has to be reconstituted. I repeat, age is not a physical condition. It is only a mental suggestion which has been accepted and thereby has become a belief, all in thought. Age has also been described as simply an accumulation of unhandled beliefs. The false education of mortal mind suggestion that we have carelessly accepted has taught us wrongly. And so man has appeared to himself to age and die in obedience to his mental acceptance of these suggestions of age, but certainly not because of a physical condition. Seeing all of these material appearing symptoms of aging as belief or suggestion rather than as physical conditions is imperative. May I illustrate? How would you, as a practitioner, deal with a patient that came to you in tears and said, I've just got to get rid of these yellow canary feathers that are growing all over my arms? When you looked at her arms and reassured her that there were no feathers, she broke into angry sobs and said, well, of course there are. I can see and feel them. Now, would you try to get rid of the feathers? Of course not. That would be silly. Why? Because you know absolutely that there were no feathers to get rid of. You would see that there was only a false belief of feathers mentally entertained. You would immediately concern yourself exclusively with removing the false belief, wouldn't you? How? By breaking the hypnotic spell, of course, for nothing else would or could free her. Would you even bother to look at her arms again to see if and when a healing took place? You could almost chuckle at that, so confident are you that there is absolutely nothing about the body to be concerned with, to be healed. Now let's change the circumstances a bit. Suppose that a patient comes to you complaining of a skin disease on her arms, a condition which, they say, has been in her family for generations. Would your response be the same and as sure as it was for the case of feathers? Would you turn at once from the body and simply deal exclusively with the false hypnotic thought? Why not? Is the nature of the problem any less mental? Absolutely not. Then, what would cause one to falter, to doubt, to hesitate now? Well, it's the acceptance of that third story of creation which causes us to consider a material body, is it not? If we choose that biological foundation of man, beginning with and thus identifying him as a material body, we have, without realizing it, accepted the so-called laws of nature said to govern man. Since nature declares that canary feathers don't grow on man, it is comparatively easy to avoid accepting that false suggestion. But since hereditary skin disease is said to be included in the laws of nature, one accepts it as a condition of body, as a reality, rather than just another hypnotic suggestion to be dissipated mentally. When we begin by looking at man according to the first story of creation as spiritual, then we can see so clearly that neither the suggestion of heredity or disease of any kind could ever be true of a spiritual idea any more than canary feathers could be. It follows so surely when this is the basis of our identification of man. Recognizing how easily we dealt with canary feathers when we refused to connect them with body, with man, we gain a little insight into the continuous freedom afforded by simply beginning with the Genesis account of spiritual man, the image and likeness of God, in drawing our conclusions about ourselves. How enormously important it is to our well-being and spiritual growth. For, as Mrs. Eddy said, to begin rightly is to end rightly, and that's from Science and Health. We come to see that identifying ourselves as the image and likeness of God establishes not only our perfection, harmony, joy, intelligence, divine purpose, strength, and freedom, but it establishes our immortality and all that that includes. We see ourselves as birthless and therefore ageless, deathless, diseaseless, and indestructible, as never born and never dying. Our leader tells us, the human capacities are enlarged and perfected in proportion as humanity gains the true conception of man and God. And that also is from Science and Health. Is there anyone who wouldn't want their human capacities enlarged and perfected? Isn't that what we're all seeking? This is, of course, exactly what this identification of ourselves as God's image and likeness does. This identification requires consistency in looking to the spiritual model. If we don't, we are like a sculptor carving a statue of a kangaroo. Every other day, A prankster who knows the sculptor to be a little forgetful puts a picture of a warthog on the easel where the picture of the kangaroo had been. The sculptor fails to notice and goes busily on with his work. One day he looks at a kangaroo model, the next day at a warthog model. You can well imagine the odd statue that evolves, probably the highest jumping two-legged hog that you ever heard of. How about the mental switching which goes on in the identification of ourselves? 1 hour as an idea of God looking to and through the material sense to the spiritual model, and the next hour slipping over and seeing ourselves as mortal looking to and through physical sense at the matter model having a material birth. Is it any wonder that we become discouraged, confused, and tired with the result? Isn't this all that goes on with dualism, trying to serve two masters, spirit and matter? When we try to cling to both, we are like a man going down on a sinking ship and holding desperately to its main mast. Then, when someone on a rescue ship throws him a rope, he tries to play it safe by holding onto it as well as to the mast, one with each hand. It almost tears him in two. Sooner or later, we too have to make our choice. A matter model of man born unto woman, or the spiritual model, God's man. Annie M. Knott, one of Mrs. Eddy's early students, gives us an interesting concept of choosing the right model. This is in the Christian Science Sentinel for January 10, 1914. Here is a section. In one of Mrs. Eddy's classes, a student remarked that she always endeavored to have the perfect body in her thought when giving a treatment. Mrs. Eddy at once asked where she found her authority for such a method. The student hesitatingly responded that it was from Science and Health, and after a little search, she triumphantly read the statement on page 407. Let the perfect model be present in your thoughts. Smiling as one would at the mistake of a child, Mrs. Eddy then asked if she regarded the body as the model here referred to, and the student said she had so believed up to that moment. With the utmost patience, Mrs. Eddy then explained to her students that we can only perceive the divine and perfect model as we are, to quote Paul, absent from the body and present with the Lord. Humanity has been slowly yielding up the belief in a corporeal God, but it still clings to the belief in a bodily model for man while accepting the scriptural statement that he is God's likeness. Strictly speaking, we can have but one model, God's perfect idea with countless reflections, all governed by the one divine principle. So we see how important it is for us to have an ageless spiritual model to look at continually, as Mrs. Eddy says. In closing, what do we have a right to expect from holding to such a spiritual model? Someone well past middle age might ask, is it too late for me? Let Mrs. Eddy answer this in her response to a similar question published in the Christian Science Journal, Volume 2, Number 9, page 3. Is it possible to change the aged form to one of youth, beauty, and immortality without the change called death? Mrs. Eddy replied, in proportion as the law of truth is understood and accepted, it obtains in person and character. The deformities and infirmities said to be the inevitable results of age under the opposite mental impressions disappear. You change the physical manifestation in proportion to your changed thoughts of the effect of accumulative years. Expecting an increase of youthfulness and vigor from advanced years, with as much faith as you look for decrepitude and ugliness, a favorable result would be sure to follow. The added wisdom of age and experience is strength, not weakness, and we should understand this, expect it, and know that it is so, then it would appear. Think of it. We are birthless, ageless, deathless, and we live progressively ascending all the time. Mr. Jensen ends this article with the following poem. Every day is your birthday, dear. Every day throughout the year, your loving Father gives to you a birthday gift, all fresh and new. Joyous life that cannot cease, blessed truth that giveth peace, love that doth all good increase. Every day is your birthday, dear. Every day throughout the year.